Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News, the morning after the Georgia runoff election that has determined the fate of the Senate. It does appear that Joe Biden will be elected formally by Congress today, and that both Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff will win the Senate seats in Georgia, which will give Democrats 100% control of the institutions in Washington. They'll have the White House, the Senate, and the House. Now, they'll have it by the thinnest of margins in all cases. The Senate will actually technically be 50-50, which means that Vice President Kamala Harris, should she take office on January 20th, will have to come over every day to effectuate votes to give Democrats the votes they need. And that's why the Democrats have control of the town. They don't have many margins for error. They don't have a mass mandate. And they're going to have to try to maneuver around a very ambitious left wing of their party that has broad ambitions, bringing new states into the union, getting rid of the Electoral College, packing the Supreme Court, legalizing illegal immigrants, opening up the border. We can go through them all, DACA. But the truth of the matter is the margins in both institutions are so small. I mean, Nancy Pelosi barely got reelected as House Speaker, and it's going to take the vice president on key votes to come in. And on sometimes there'll be defectors from the Democratic side. So this is going to be a dynamic we haven't seen in a very long time. And the folks are today asking, how did we get here? How bad is it going to be, or how good is it going to be, depending on your perspective? You're a Democrat, you think this is great. If you're a Republican, you're demoralized. We're going to bring in former Congressman Tom Price for many reasons. One, he's from Georgia, so he knows the state really well. He's going to help us handicap what happened in Georgia last night. But he also understands politics, policy, the Congress, and we're going to dig in deep as to what is to be learned from the 2020 election. And I have some thoughts on that I'm going to give you. But first, we're going to be back with Tom Price. But when we first come back from this next commercial break, I want to talk to you just for a couple minutes about some of the thoughts I have as someone who's covered Washington for the last 30, 35 years. What I see in the lessons of 2020, they're going to be a little different than what you may be expecting to hear, or what you've heard, or what you're worried about. But I think these come from a large base of reporting. I've been talking to more than three or four dozen political operatives on both sides, historians, people like Newt Gingrich. We're going to hear from Dr. Tom Price, the former congressman. But I've synthesized some really interesting insights from these really smart people, and I just want to share them with you. Let's go to that commercial break. We'll come right back. We'll do that, and then our exclusive interview with Tom Price, the former congressman, the doctor, the former Health and Human Services Secretary for Donald Trump. You're not going to want to miss this, but first, a great message from our great advertisers. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000, or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. In a few minutes, Dr. Tom Price is going to be joining us, the former congressman from Georgia, the former cabinet member in the Donald Trump administration, the HHS secretary. He's going to help us make sense of Georgia. I want to step back from Georgia and even go further back, because I think a lot of people have been asking me what went on in 2020. Was there widespread fraud? Was there other abuses? What happened? And I have tried to sit back and do a lot of factual analysis. And I gave you a lot of those this morning in a story I wrote that identified seven things that are irregularities from the 2020 election that are irrefutable. If people say this is baseless, it's not. All of these are confirmed. But here's the top line when you look at it. There isn't a whole lot of evidence that I've been able to find that fake people in large numbers or people who didn't intend to vote ended up voting. There are some. They're in the hundreds or thousands, I think, probably total across many states. But there are other patterns that, and again, there are these data sets like the guys we had yesterday from the Data Integrity Group that, you know, have some interesting things that we need explanations for. But I think in the big picture, beyond the questions of fraud, I think the big lesson for Republicans and conservatives in 2020 is that elections in the 21st century are no longer won after Labor Day. They're won before Labor Day. And David Plouffe and the Democrats who advised Obama and advised Biden and laid the game plan for the 2020 election when COVID struck were pretty clear about how you win the election before Labor Day. First, you get the rules of the elections changed to your advantage. And second, you own the narrative, whatever it takes. It can even be a false narrative, it turns out, because we had a lot of those in 2020. And we had a lot of those going back to 2016, Russia collusion. I mean, even Jacob Blake, the Kenosha shooting, we were told for months as this violence raged in our country that he was unarmed. And it turns out he was armed with a knife. And the officer viewed himself as in mortal danger, and that's why he shot. And there's no reason to charge that officer for crimes, according to the prosecutor who looked at this in a, by the way, Democratic city. So that's one false narrative, right? The impeachment, Ukraine, Hunter Biden is a Russian disinformation. Nothing's wrong with Hunter Biden. Well, now he's under criminal investigation. There was Russia collusion until there wasn't, right? When we found out it wasn't true. So the Democrats have set up the 2020 election by constantly creating a narrative about Donald Trump. Some things were true narratives. You know, some of his tweets, you can't deny. He said them. He did them. He wrote them. So some of the causticness is a true story. Some of those were false stories. Russia collusion. The actual presentation by the whistleblower of what happened on the call with the Ukrainian prosecutor is not true. The claim that Hunter Biden did nothing wrong and that it was all a Russian disinformation thing. It wasn't. The hard drive isn't Russian disinformation. Hunter Biden's under criminal investigation, has been so since 2018, long before I started writing the stories that the Democrats dissed. But they own the narrative, and they owned it because they have the levers of information pretty well sewed up. The mainstream media clearly leans left today. Pains me to say that, but it's not in doubt anymore. Social media giants, which got us all hooked on the cool tools of Facebook and Twitter. Listen, those are great tools. They're awesome. But now that we're so dependent on them for our businesses, for our communications, for our politics, well, they pulled political advertising out when they wanted to. They marked Donald Trump tweets and censored him. They censored the story about Hunter Biden. All of this from a left perspective, from the game plan of Saul Alinsky and David Plouffe and David Axelrod and others, was really at the 35,000-foot level, owning the narrative. If you can own the narrative, you can win the election and set the terms of the election and the perceptions of the election even before the official kickoff on Labor Day. That's the first thing. And, you know, Republicans did this for a long time. How did they do it? Well, going back to the Reagan era, they owned the narrative in the tools of the time, which were direct mail. Richard Viguerie, the famous conservative direct mail guy. Everybody got important messages in their old-fashioned mailbox, and it not only asked for money and raised money, but it said a story about Ronald Reagan or conservatism or what's wrong with card-carrying ACLU members of the left. That communication vehicle was successful for many, many years, but old-fashioned snail mail has become pretty irrelevant today. If you didn't get your Christmas packages on Christmas, you know a little bit about that. But more importantly, they're just faster, quicker ways to communicate. Email, social media particularly, YouTube, search engine optimization. The Republicans for a long time owned the narrative, controlled the narrative, because they had these amazing radio talk show host bullhorns. Rush Limbaugh, the original giant, Sean Hannity, O'Reilly, and then came Fox News. And for most of the last 30 years, Republicans have had a very strong ability to own the narrative through Fox News, through talk radio, through direct mail, and through the traditional mediums that rose in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. But starting around the time that Barack Obama rose to power in 2008, the communication channels changed, and Republicans have not been that effective, with the exception of Donald Trump on Twitter, of owning the narrative as well. And Democrats, because of their alliance with the news media and the bureaucrats that have similar ideologies in government, particularly in the Justice Department, the State Department, have been able to own the narrative. Sometimes it's a true narrative. Sometimes it's a false narrative. We've had many, many false narratives, right, in the last 3 years. But the Democrats controlled it. Adam Schiff could say things that weren't true, and we believed it for 2 or 3 years, or we predicated investigations on it, and it turned out it wasn't true. That's called owning the narrative. And Republicans right now don't do as good a job owning the narrative storytelling. And part of it is that they don't own media institutions, and they are now beholden to a Facebook, Twitter, Google, YouTube universe that is going to censor them, whether information is accurate or not. So if Republicans want to be on the same parallel, fighting with both hands, they need to invest now in a media and social media infrastructure. There are many places to do it. But Parler is rising up. Well, I'm going to bring on the show later the week, this week, the creator of a brand new platform that I'm very interested in and sort of become an ambassador for, called Clout Hub. It's Facebook and YouTube and other social skills all in one outlet. You're going to love to hear from Jeff Brain, the inventor of that, the owner, the founder of that. We've got the new video platform where, by the way, Justin News puts all of its videos, called Rumble. But these are small in size. They're 1/10, 1/20th the size of Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. But if Republicans and conservatives want to get on even ground, they got to build these up so that they're not censored, so they're not there, and get them to a scale that by 2022, 2024, they can compete in the social media on-demand video world. Some people believe Drudge has left the conservative movement. Some people believe that Fox News doesn't fully represent their values anymore. I think there's a good debate on both of those. But if you believe it, that's your problem, that those are the institutions you used to rely on, just like you relied on talk radio, you got to build new things. So maybe there's someone that builds a new Drudge Report. The Citizens Free Press is building a lot of traction. Maybe there are others. If you're worried that Fox News isn't there, there are new alternatives. We're partnered with Real America's Voice. But Republicans need to figure out how to own the narrative the way the Democrats have owned the narrative the last 12 years, and particularly the last 4 years. I mean, they made calling undocumented workers fashionable when in fact they could just as easily be called illegal aliens, right? They called them DACA kids, but they're illegally here, right? They've owned the narrative, the rules, the terms. They've now owned the social media censorship capabilities. Republicans have to build a media infrastructure, news organizations that tell the story truthfully, social media that won't censor it, and communicators that can deliver it like Ronald Reagan delivered to his generation. We need people that can do that. And if you're a conservative, that's what we need. And if you're a liberal, that's what you need. But I think you've had it for the last few years. The truth of the matter is the people like George Soros and John Podesta and David Plouffe and all of the Obama advisors, they figured this out and they executed. They didn't whine, they didn't cry, they didn't complain. They just created the infrastructure. And now If conservatives want to be on an even playing field, they got to do the same thing. So owning the narrative is the first thing. The second thing that they did so well, and remarkably, they did it well in states where the Republicans control the legislature, they changed the rules of this election. I don't think there's as much widespread fraud, and I think the debate over the last 2 months has been too much focused on trying to find fraud, which is hard to prove, and not enough on the fact that rules in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada were changed. The rules were just simply changed, and they were done so, with, except in the case of Nevada, without their legislators' consent. So Republicans control five of those six states, right? Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona, Michigan, and Pennsylvania are all Republican-controlled legislatures, and legislatures have the role of setting the rules of election. And Democrats came in through the form of their governors or through negotiation settlements with people like Stacey Abrams in Georgia, and they gained concessions, changes, significant changes to the rules of the election, and those Wisconsin Republican legislators in those states didn't object. They didn't rise up. They didn't fight it. Texas did, but not Wisconsin, not Georgia. They made concessions. They made settlements. And the legislature's authority to set the rules the way they wanted was usurped. And in fact, the rules that the legislatures had imposed were not being followed. That could include voter ID, like in Wisconsin, where the voter IDs were obliterated. If Republicans want to get on a playing field, even with them, I had two choices in 2020. They could fight back and impose the rules that the legislatures originally had in the states, not allow mass ballots to go out. They didn't succeed at that. The legislators didn't fully utilize their constitutional authority. If you're not going to fight it, then the last thing you want to do is surrender on the terms. And Republicans surrendered on the terms. They refused to engage in the absentee ballot system that they had allowed the Democrats to create. They could have stopped it, but they didn't. Once they allowed them to create the absentee ballot system, they didn't play by the rules. They tried to get everybody out to vote on election day. And, you know, listen, in the middle of a pandemic, there are conservatives who don't want to go out and vote. If you didn't run absentee campaigns and efforts, you may not have succeeded. So if you're going to change the rules, the second lesson here is either play by them or you oppose changing the rules. And in this case, the Republicans had the upper hands in every state but Nevada, and they didn't. And those legislatures, if they want to change the game for 2022, 2024, they got to go back and impose their will. And not in a mean-spirited way, but just say, listen, the majority of Americans support voter ID. The majority of Americans oppose mass blanket registration being sent out or mass blanket absentee ballots going out. Most Americans support that you only send an absentee ballot to a person who needs it and requests it. Wisconsin didn't do that. They allowed people who didn't need it to self-declare that they deserved an absentee ballot and could skip voter ID, and 200,000 people did, according to the current statistics. So what we have here today is a moment. And at 30,000 feet, Republicans, conservatives have a challenge. They got to learn how to own the narrative in the era of social media, search engine optimization, YouTube. And they've got to build infrastructure and news organizations and Drudge reports and podcasts and other things that can even the narrative out with the truth that, you know, reasonable, smart, good information. And then they got to build the delivery systems, the Rumbles, the Parlors, the Cloud Hubs need to be supported and grown quickly so that they're on equal par with the liberals' infrastructure on Twitter, on YouTube, on Facebook, and Google. It can be done, but someone has to set out to do it. And then two, the Republicans either have to set the rules where they have the power to do the election and enforce them, or adapt their practices to the way that the Democrats use the system. It's a very simple thing. You either unilaterally disarm or you engage. And I think the story in Georgia will ultimately be proven that Republicans allowed an absentee ballot, floating ballot box system, and then didn't take advantage of it. They let the Democrats leverage it, and they sat there and tried to do the election the old-fashioned way when there was an easier way to get votes in. And I want to talk to Dr. Tom Price about that because he's been in Georgia. He's watched this for years. He's a studied man, and that's why we're bringing him on the show. He'll be here right after these commercial messages. Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy, and most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews and use the promo code justnews to save 10%. All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest. You've seen him in Congress. You've seen him run our Health and Human Services Department. And he's a doctor on top of it, a great achiever. Dr. Tom Price is joining us today. Sir, welcome to the show.
Hey, John, good to be with you. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. What a year it's going to be. So you know Georgia about as well as anyone, and I wonder if you could give us your assessment of what happened last night and what lessons we can learn from it.
Yeah, I think this is incredibly important. What happened is that Democrats were successful, I believe, in taking both of the Senate seats. They did so in a way that basically leapfrogged Republicans' process, strategy, technology, and tactics, and that's to the credit of folks on the Democrat side. Stacey Abrams being the one who kind of championed all of this. They have perfected harvesting. I believe it's harvesting of absentee ballots, and I think that the numbers will show in these runoff races the same as they did in November, and that is that Republicans who lost by close margins. One on election day, one with early voting in person, and lost significantly on absentee ballots. And so the conventional wisdom always was absentee ballots kind of broke the same way that regular voting, in-person voting,
right,
broke in elections. But that's no longer true. Certainly isn't true here in Georgia, and that's what they've done. And Republicans need to step back and say, okay, we need to do a postmortem. We need to figure out where things went wrong. But I think we also need to look at the bigger picture, and that is how are we connecting or not connecting with the electorate? And I think there's a lot of introspection and reflection that needs to occur.
Yeah, that is such a great point, because at the end of the day, politics is also ultimately a bond of trust. And if you don't make that connection, even if you got great policies and you got great infrastructure and great ads, if you don't make that connection, you fail. And you know, a lot of people always talking about that connection. They always talk about the difference between Goldwater and Reagan. They had the same policies and the same vision for America, but one could really connect in a way that the other never did. What are the one of the things that I've been talking to, man, probably about three dozen state legislators in the last few days, all Republicans, all in states where the rules were changed in ways that the legislatures never intended. So Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. And it's been a remarkable conversation, because these legislators saw in real time last spring and summer the discussions in Georgia. It was the consent decree and the negotiations in Wisconsin. It was just the Wisconsin Election Commission acting unilaterally under a Democratic governor. In Michigan, it was the Secretary of State acting without the legislature's approval. Do you see a moment in the not-so-distant future where these Republican legislatures in these democratically won states go back and say, we are taking back the rules of our elections, that bureaucrats aren't going to set the rules anymore. We are. Is that one of the next steps in this process?
Absolutely. But it's got to be done in a way that respects the vote, encourages individuals to vote, but articulates it in a way that we want the vote to be done in a fair and open and absolutely transparent process. What the Democrats have done is to frame Republican objections to these kinds of activities as wanting to suppress the vote, which is nonsense. What we want is to make sure that those who are eligible to vote are voting in as big a numbers as possible, but that there isn't a thumb or a foot or a brick on the scale in a non-transparent way, and thus turning these elections, which is what I think is likely occurring. But that's going to take some time, because you've got to, again, as you mentioned, you've got to have the trust of the people. If Republicans are seen as simply saying, we don't want folks who aren't going to vote for us to vote.
Right.
And that's what the narrative on the other side is. If that's the way Republicans are seen, then any activity that state legislatures do not only will be likely unsuccessful, it may result in significant backlash from the public. And so you've got to go out and get that public trust. People want elections to be fair. There's no doubt about the vast majority.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
All of our polling shows it.
Put your effort.
Yeah, yep, we've had polls, 80% or 77% of people support voter ID, and 67% oppose just mass mailing out ballots to people who didn't ask for them, the majority of the American people are on the side of this, and I think you're right. It's about the rhetoric, and it's about the way you go about imposing these rules that will make this successful or a failure for the Republicans.
That's exactly right.
It looks as though Donald Trump won't be president on January 21st. And so the question I have for you, you worked for him. You know the general, you've seen the size of the movement, right? It's 75, 80 million. I just drove through Washington this morning, and there are tens of thousands of people in the city with two flags, an American flag and a Trump or MAGA flag, together on a pole walking down the street. His movement is, you know, undeniably large. As someone who's been in politics and really done it well, what does the Republican Party do with the Trump movement? How do they nurture it? How do they keep it in there, even if there's a change of guard of different players in Congress and in the White House?
Well, I think we even talked about this before, and that is that there's I believe we're in the middle of a realignment of the political parties. And when you're in the midst of that storm, it's tough to know which way to turn and how to accelerate movement to your team of folks who might not otherwise have thought that they would want to come on your team. But it's key to continue to touch base with those folks, speak with those folks, and encourage those individuals to continue to be engaged in a positive way, and also to do so with a sense of optimism. That you mentioned Reagan. Reagan was incredibly successful because he always, as he said, thought it was important to appeal to our better angels.
And that
is so imperative to do in politics. Folks, by and large, want positive, upbeat, optimistic, hopeful messages. They want realistic messages. But they want to know that whoever is going to lead them is going to lead them in a way that will encourage individuals to treat each other with respect and dignity, as opposed to the fear mongering, which can get very, very old and tiresome.
Yeah, that's the key thing. It's about tonality and about messaging. The policies seem to be very popular, right? People want us to contest China's growth of influence. They want fair and free trade, but free trade without fairness isn't free trade. And so all the policies that Donald Trump, I think, and that you helped implement, obviously as part of the cabinet, they're incredibly popular with the folks. And it's even appealing more to Hispanics and African Americans than in prior Republican administrations. So it seems to me that the opportunity now is, how do you take Donald Trump's vision, message, and people, and just put a polish on it that makes it connect with people more? When you look at the constituencies that are traditionally been in the Republican fold, and obviously Donald Trump brought a lot more into that. Is there one or two particular constituencies that you feel were chagrined by the Trump style that there's a real opportunity to embrace? Is it suburban women? Where do you look at the coalitions and say, just with some messaging and connection changes, we can bring them into the tent again?
Yeah, I think there are a number of them. One, you mentioned suburban women, and it's very clear that suburban women, by and large, are questioning whether or not, or have outright neglected or rejected whether or not Republicans at the national level are able to embrace the kinds of things that they believe are most helpful for themselves and for their families. And
right.
And you know, women make a huge majority of percentage of decisions in the household for so many things, not just healthcare. It certainly is healthcare, but so many, many things. And so you've got to be able to have a message that speaks to their concerns. Young people, I remember the Reagan Revolution was so many of us who were attracted to public service did so because of what Reagan brought about. Again, that optimistic, upbeat, positive America first, yes, but principled policymaking posture. And so young people, we've just got to, the next generation, you got to continue to speak to them and to listen to their concerns. And then I think minorities are ripe for a message of optimism and encouragement and free markets and economic prosperity and opportunities that the GOP certainly embraces, but has had a difficult time translating. So whether it's African Americans, whether it's Latinos, whether it's Asian Americans or the like, I think all of those, most of those folks who are out there are in small business, and small business is so incredibly important to the vibrancy and the success of the country.
Yeah, we keep talking about the big giant companies, right, because they either have big layoffs or big earnings. But the engine of the American economy is that Main Street small business, whether it's the dry cleaner, the restaurant. And, of course,
that's right.
They have taken a beating in the last year, even with all of the great things that Job Creators Network and other people have done to get the PPP and loans in. That the engine of America that has made us strong for 50, 60, 70 years is in grave danger.
That's right.
What do you think can be done if there's a Democratic Senate, Democratic House, and a Joe Biden? What are some of the policy areas where Republicans can create success and engage with the Democrats and do something? Do you look for more aid post-COVID? Do you look for infrastructure? Do you see some places where Republicans can work together and distinguish themselves but still create good for the American people?
Yeah, I think you mentioned infrastructure, and I think that's probably on the top of the list of the policies that should be bipartisan and are absolutely vitally necessary. We've got infrastructure failures that we see every single day across this country because we've allowed our systems to age out and continue to use them, and they're taxed from a utilization standpoint to a fairly well. So infrastructure is absolutely significant. I'm as a physician, I always believe healthcare can be a bipartisan issue. If you think and talk about the principles that we believe in, you want everybody have access to care and affordable care and coverage, quality coverage and care, and certainly choices for patients. And so if you think about it in those terms, then I think there are some opportunities to have some bipartisan activity there. And then economic development is vital, and that's where, again, small business comes in. And it's not that small businesses are ideological, because most of them aren't. They want to be basically left alone and allowed to
be successful,
follow their dreams and be successful. And so we ought to be able to work in a bipartisan way to encourage small business, not just formation, but success and expansion.
When you look out now, because obviously there'll be a changing of the guard. Now, Donald Trump's not going to fade away. That's not his style, nor will his movement want him to fade away. But When you look out on the horizon, who are some of the next generation Republicans that get you excited, that can fulfill some of these mission tasks that you just, you literally created a great battlefield plan here. Who are some of those people that you think are going to step up and fill the next generation of Republican leadership jobs?
Well, you've got so many folks, and I think it's interesting because when you look across the House floor, you look at House leadership, you look across the Senate floor, many of the individuals that are on the Republican side are younger.
They are.
And are remarkably accomplished, and we haven't told that story well at all. So whether it's Nikki Haley, who I think is just a star in the Republican Party,
right?
Whether it's the folks who stood up and fought for freedom and liberty out there, whether it's Rand Paul or Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz or folks like that,
right.
And then you've got. I've been gone from the House now almost, I guess, 4 years.
It's hard to believe it's been 4 years. It doesn't feel like that. Yeah.
No, but and so there's been a huge changing of the guard there, and I'm not as familiar with those folks that are visionaries there and can lead the charge. But people will rise up, and that's the important thing that I think that politics is dynamic. It's a pendulum. We've seen a move away from Republicans in certain areas, but we've also seen a move toward Republicans. So the number of Republican women who were elected to the House this year, I think, is incredibly
historic.
Exciting
yeah.
and invigorating. And we ought to embrace that and tell that story. If you asked 100 folks on the street if they even knew that, I'll bet 98 wouldn't. And we rarely tell the positive story about the good things that we're doing. We think people are paying attention, but people are paying attention to their
yeah.
homes and their families.
They're too
and
busy.
Their jobs. They're too busy. Exactly right. So you've got to in a positive, upbeat way, and just be able to reach them with the kinds of things that they would appreciate. And I think we'll. But we've got to do that. We haven't done that well at all.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And that brings me to the last thing I want to talk to you about. So. When you read the David Pluffs, when you read the David Axelrods, when you read their vision of how they were going to win this 2020 election, because they put it out right out in plain view. It wasn't hard to figure out what they were going to do. Changing the election rules was clearly a big part of it. But a second part of it was owning the story, owning the narrative. And the Republicans have had such a long and I think what people can say a justified distrust of the media, particularly after the Russia collusion story that got sold to us, or even let's take the Blake story in Kenosha, where the guy was armed and for 7 months we were told he was unarmed. When you go through that, do the Republicans, they've been relying on two things for probably about 40 years, right? Well, three things. Direct mail, Richard Viguerie, that great era, and then the talk radio, and then the advent of Fox News. Do Republicans need to create an information infrastructure, their own Facebook, their own Twitter, their own newspapers, so that their messages can reach large numbers of people like the liberal messages do today?
Absolutely, without a doubt. And I would point to this recent election here in Georgia as the prime example. We had a 9-week runoff election in two United States Senate races for the most important thing in Washington. That was to have whether or not you got balanced of power or whether you have one party control. $830 million, just under $1 billion.
It's hard to imagine.
9 weeks here.
Yeah.
On network advertising and on direct mail, and it didn't change the message that I want to get out here is the take home message is it didn't change the numbers significantly,
right?
Because the election yesterday was within 1% for these folks that it was 9 weeks ago,
right?
And so that what that tells me is that we're just playing to a draw.
Yeah.
We're not reaching folks. And so we've got to be creative about how we're reaching them. And I think we've got to be able to control and own a lot of that messaging. And we just don't right now. And so that's where I would put a lot of effort and focus from a strategic standpoint.
Yeah, that's such a great point. There's so much work to be done. I know a lot of people spend the time after election loss with recriminations, but the real opportunity here is 1992, Bill Clinton gave the Republicans the 1994 revolution, right? And I think
yep.
that if conservatives and Republicans don't fight much, just get right back to figuring out the way they can do this. They can build an infrastructure to get back and take these places back. Dr. Price, I can't thank you enough for all you do and for joining us here and giving us some great insights. I know people are going to love this this playbook that you put before us.
John, you're very kind. Take care, be well, be safe, and all the best to you. Happy New Year.
You too, sir. Thank you very much. All right, folks, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up for the day. Hey, folks, John Solomon here from John Solomon Reports. I'm proud to be on the iHeartRadio app every day with my podcast, with the news that we bring, the exclusive interviews. And you know what else is great? You can listen to any iHeartRadio station anywhere in the country inside this free app. I used to listen to all sorts of radio on my AM or FM radio. Today, I don't have time to be in the car that often. You know where I listen? I listen on the iHeartRadio app. It's awesome. And they have some really cool new features, unlike anything else in the market. One of them is called Talk Back Mic. Anytime I have something to say, I tap the mic and send my voice message and then listen to hear my voice on one of my favorite shows. Isn't that cool? You can send a message to your favorite disc jockey, your favorite podcast show host. So be sure to download the iHeart app radio. If you don't have it right now, the iHeart Radio app is a winner. Be sure to download the free iHeart Radio app today and start streaming your favorite radio stations, your favorite podcasts, and your favorite music playlists right from the iHeart Radio app. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. It's time to wrap it up. Yes, probably by the time you listen to this, or certainly by tomorrow, Joe Biden will be officially the president-elect, declared by Congress. And I do believe that Ossoff will have been declared the winner in Georgia soon. Warnock already has. And Washington's becoming a Democrat town, but narrow margins. And as I talked about, there's two ways to go about this. If you're a conservative or Republican, you can spit in the wind and curse the darkness, or you can do what Newt Gingrich did after Bill Clinton's stunning win in 1992. And in 1993, build a new revolution. And you got to play on the terms and times of the day. That means more social media, more narrative owning, taking ownership of the voting rules that legislatures are allowed to set. Republicans have a lot of tools here. Will they use them? We'll find out. There's two ways to go: mourn and weep and close up into a fetal position, or get out there and replicate history. Every movement can create an equal and opposite reaction. Donald Trump has inspired 75 million Americans to get involved in the Republican Party. If they can learn how to own the narrative better, if they can develop those delivery content systems and social systems, the alternate universe of social media, if they can get better news coverage by investing in news institutions and content institutions, they can own the narrative. And if they use their legislatures to recalibrate the rules, not in a mean way. We don't want to scare people by thinking Republicans are the party of repression. But listen, people support voter ID. I think most Americans want every legal vote and only every legal vote to count. There's a way to message that narrative, own that narrative, and impose that narrative in a way that will make America happy and trusting in their elections. 31% of people in our poll say they don't believe the election results. When a third of America doesn't trust a presidential election result in the greatest democracy and constitutional republic in America, there's a problem, but it's a problem that can be fixed. Remember, all those things we talked about today, Rumble, Parler, and the new platform that I've been studying. I'm on Rumble and Parler every day doing lots of things. So is Just the News. But now Cloud Hub, there are all sorts of opportunities. There are more Just the News that can be created. We can grow Just the News if you like it. But sitting on your hands and crying is not a solution. Newt Gingrich proved that in 93. You could quickly come back from a big election whooping. This is an election whooping for Republicans. There's two messages you can take from it. Fix it, or live with it and whine for a long time. And I think we'll find out soon who rises up in the party to get the work done. We'll talk about this more tomorrow. We'll be back with another edition of John Solomon Reports tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Thanks for all you do to support Just the News, to read us, to share us, to consume us, to spread the word. We hope we are becoming a trusted news source for you. And we thank you. God bless you. God bless America. We'll be back tomorrow. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.